You're now listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, broadcasting from sunny Orange County, California. Filmmaker, journalist, and film historian, Paul Booth.
Aloha. Welcome to Talking Pictures. I'm your host with Paul Booth. Thank you for joining us today. We will be joined by director Marcus Mizell and discuss the film Chameleon, which hit last week to all the platforms. Even I think Best Buy has it. I was looking for it in Walmart last night because I wanted to take a picture of it to put on social media. This is really cool because this film is like 180 from what Marcus's last film, Actor for Hire, was. And Marcus came on twice last time. He came on with his actor, Jesse O'Neill, and he came on to talk about it. And that was, I remember it was episode 75. And I remember I was so jazzed because I was thinking like, oh my God, we hit episode 75. Like, how are we going to make 100? I was just clueless with pride. This will be like episode 365. And we have a few that are still locked that we're working on. So it is really cool that we're going to get to talk with Marcus 300 episodes later, find out what he's up to. He's a sports guy, so I'm sure he's going to have some insight to his creative world without his basketball. And I know he's a big baseball fan, which I am. Personally, I'm going cuckoo without baseball. Really cool. This is a crime thriller. To me, it's much in the vein of Michael Mann. I'm going to talk to Marcus about this. I'm sure he has a great, I'm sure he's influenced by Michael Mann. I mean, I don't know what filmmaker is it. Here we go. We have a caller. All right. I think we have our caller here. Let me see which one it is.
Yes. Welcome. This is about the movie Chameleon. This is Marcus.
And who's this? This is Marcus.
This is Marcus.
Marcus who?
Mizell, I
What's
think
the
is how they
password?
Say it. I'm not sure. It's going to be croissants.
All right. Well, I guess you know the password, so I'll let you on. How are you doing? How's everything going?
I'm pretty good. I cannot complain. We made it through the first week of release, and it went well, I think. So I'm good. How are you doing?
Excellent. I'm very happy. Oh, I'm doing good. I'm going nuts without baseball, but we'll get into that a little later.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's kind of like, where's my meditation and yoga? People are like, I need my yoga mat. I'm like, no, I need a baseball game.
Look, man, this whole thing started like 3 days before the March Madness tournament started. It was the start. So that is just terrible for me. No basketball right when the playoffs start.
Terrible. Yes. I had it in my notes to talk to you about because I know you're a basketball guy. I see your post,
cool,
and I know you're and what the region you're from. And right now I'm in Kentucky, so it's like everything is...
Oh,
you know, UK, 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 and nothing's going on. Yeah. So the first question I'm interested in, because I had mentioned before you came on that this was to me very kind of 180 from your last film. So I was kind of interested in like what made like do you remember the point where you kind of the moment where you were like, I want to do this story, kind of this genre, jump into this whirlwind. This is where I'm going to put my energy right now.
Absolutely. So yeah, so 180 was the kind of the whole goal. But I've always been intent on being more, kind of like a Billy Wilder type. I always wanted to do a variety of type of, I wanted to do every genre, for example. I don't want to just be stuck in one thing, just comedy or just whatever. Like, I always wanted to make a crime film. But I've always loved comedy, but also I love other types of genres. We're not there yet, but yeah, I mean, life is short. Why not make a bunch of different types of movies? So that being said, the specific moment, Joel and I were sitting at the bar, Molly Malone's on Fairfax. And I was just talking to him about, what I wanted to do next and told him about this short story idea that I had called Lover. It was about basically what happens in the Big Bear sequence of Chameleon. And it's essentially just about this guy who's working with a partner and who's like basically manipulating these trophy wives, by taking them out of LA, seducing them in LA and then taking them to like a remote getaway and then, getting their money to pay a fake ransom. Anyways, from that idea, we built out we were just chatting and talking and I said, I want to do a crime thriller that has a twist and a turn. I want to do some twists and some turns for this next one. And so went and got to work on the script and the rest is history.
pretty much.
Well, that's excellent. I love that little one. Just you think that little kernel of popcorn turns into a huge, big, large popcorn.
It's always how it is.
You know?
Yeah.
I dig
it's
that.
It's always how it is, yeah.
And thank you for mentioning Billy Wilder. I am not a film snob. I hate that we even have to say this, but we are at a point where I often hear Billy Wilder who, and Marcus is alluding
what?
To that he did do more than... Yes, I do hear it, surprisingly.
Oh, really?
No, let me rephrase. Of course, they know Sunset Boulevard. Of course, they know Some Like It Hot, but they don't get into Slalog 17 and Ace in the Hole and Double Indemnity and... You know, all of his great work with Jack Lemmon. And, you know, so I'm glad that you said that. Thank you for saying that, because we always hope that a filmmaker brings that up. Billy Wilder, Howard Hawks, of course, so many different genres. Okay, so the crime thriller, I'm just jumping. It's what the film felt like to me. Were you just like totally influenced by Collateral with the way you shot this and your use of location and...
The whole Michael Mann influence, which is, I'm grateful to even be compared to Michael Mann, but I think it was just an accident. Like I didn't go in thinking about Michael Mann or trying to be like Michael Mann, but it ended up kind of having some very Michael Mann-ish moments, which I got to insert here. Like what's so crazy is Michael Mann was sitting in the damn delivery room, when my baby was being born at the hospital at Cedars-Sinai, by the way, I swear to God. And I did not say hey to him because I didn't know what the hell he was doing there. And it was like my baby was about to, you know, pop out. So I didn't know, you know, when the good time was to talk. But Michael Mann was sitting there when my baby was being born. I can't make that up. As far as to answer your question, yeah, that's a whole other podcast.
I don't want to say tough call on what you pay attention to. Sorry, go ahead.
You're right. Yeah, right.
Sorry.
Maybe I have to go back in the room and see if the baby's coming. Yeah. But, my dad actually talked to him and gave him my business card. He hadn't called
me. Oh, hey, that's cool.
But he's very nice. But anyway, I've also run into Christopher Nolan 3 times in my life already, which is just coincidentally 3 different times. Spoke to him the first time. And again, that's definitely an influence of mine, you know, as far as crime genre is concerned. Like, I've run into Michael Mann, I've run into Christopher Nolan. Now I just need Tarantino and... Soderbergh, because Out of Sight's a big inspiration, and I think I'll be good. I'm sure I'm forgetting some people, but that movie was a big influence as far as what, you know, part of what Chameleon's narrative, you know, leads into, and it's like a, you know, sort of, you know, I can't talk too much about it without giving too much away, but basically I think...
Of course.
Yeah, that's definitely an influence, and that was kind of something that I was... conscious about a little bit, but try not to emulate too much. What else did we have? You know what? I will say there was a specific, conscious approach to the first reel of Chameleon when it came to Michael Mann, as far as, you know, his whole, you know, early in the film, you know, Joel's character Patrick is trying to live a straight life and trying to be an ex-con that's just doing what society expects him to do. And he wants to work his way out and do what, you know, be legit, you know? So he has this dishwasher job because nobody else wants to give you a job. And it kind of, that was inspired from, you know, what is his name? The Nationwide guy.
Dennis Haysbert. Dennis Haysbert.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Dennis Haysbert, the president in 24.
Yes. There you go. Yes. So, sorry, I should know his name. It always escapes me. But that scene.
Oh, no, no. That's what made me think.
Treated like crap, you know, for being a con man, you know. And so that was lifted. And I also had washed dishes in my life before, so I know what the hope was of that feels like. So that is a Michael Mann inspired kind of thing a little bit.
You know, I like that you said that, because when you talk about process, or when we talk about process and growth with the artists we have on, I had this dishwashing job because my father owned a restaurant for 22 years. So I used to just remember looking at dishes thinking I would never, ever do anything again but wash dishes. And like not in a negative way, but it just seemed like that was what I was like meant to do. So it's like I really...
It was your destiny.
Just want to... So I want to let people know that if you're out there with your hands in the dishes, things do turn around, things do happen. It's kind of like a rite of passage, washing other people's dishes out. Yeah, so I'm glad that you said that. That because Chameleon deals with, you know, as you said, the trophy wife, the manipulation, it kind of deals with, I'm not saying you're making a social statement about class, but is there any way when you approach projects with anything that you're saying with Chameleon that you kind of maybe had to kind of step back because of the climate or kind of like dealing with the manipulation of women? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, love this question. I love it. So look, the answer would be no. I mean, the bottom line is this is, I'm not a fan of following trends or following what you're supposed to do. I'm not a fan of being told what I shouldn't say, you know, I think it's all about just being honest with yourself and being able to speak your mind. We do live in a free country. That being said, there's no attack on women here. It's just the simple fact that we are attacking superficial people that happen to be men and women. And I would say there's more of an attack on rich old white men in this movie than anybody. If you wanted to make it a social thing, because you're literally punishing, yes, you're kidnapping trophy wives, people that have been, that have married older men for their money. So, you know, that's, you know, but also these older men are the ones that are ultimately being stolen from because they have, you know, kind of crappy values as well, as far as, you know, they're in it for lust, not love, type thing. But anyways, the whole right. idea of the specific reason to make the kidnappees and the victims, LA trophy wives and their rich older husbands, is because, you know, when you start trying to write a film, tell a story about a criminal and like an anti-hero, whoever they're conning, or con men, for example, I think whoever they're conning, they have to be even more kind of worse or looked down upon by the viewer than the con men themselves for it to work. You know what I mean? Kind of like
interesting.
Sustained. Because you can't just have, how can you care or root for a character or characters if they're conning someone that's respected by society, you know? So that's the reason, that's the sole reason for the superficial, victims. And I just kind of kept it simple and said, well, let me just pull, I live in Brentwood, you know, and Brentwood's nice, but the West Side, you see some superficial people, you know, in LA in general. And, I just kind of borrowed from that and kept it simple, man. You know, I'm just being honest, like I'm from North Carolina. And so like, I'm just comparing this to that, and it wasn't too much of a stretch for me to make them the victims, if you will, you know.
It was a little tricky
in retrospect. Yeah, I was just saying, as far as the climate, the social climate, it's definitely an underneath kind of like unspoken context, I think, as of now. But there's nothing you can do about it. You have to go and do what you feel like you need to do, you know, because the movie's going to be around way longer than the social climate will be.
I love that you're saying that, because what you said is exactly how I feel. But of course, hosting a show, I have to mind my P's and Q's a little bit more. But I think I love hearing guests say that, and I love when their films have that, like, not holding back. Like, I kind of, when I was watching, I was thinking like, hey, this is kind of saying some things, and I love that you're not backing down. And then just through social media, I know that you're not from Los Angeles. And then also last time when you're on the show, and then also I think we both know and have experienced that Los Angeles gets such a bad reputation for there not being good people. But then I always say that it also earns its reputation of bad people. So it's like this weird enigma to me, you know? So that's why I was just kind of like,
these guys
with trophy wives. Yeah. Like I wouldn't want my wife kidnapped and me ripped off. But then if I was ever that arrogant, I wouldn't have any friends. And if all I was doing was dating a 20-year-old, then I guess that would be my punishment. So
at the end of the day, too, you're making a crime story or you're not. You're making a crime story. You're also, you know, somebody has to be the victim here, you know, and it's just somebody's going to be upset about something no matter what you do or say. Anyways, you just might as well go ahead and do or say whatever the hell you want to do or say. That's just all there is to it, you know. But of course, don't be a jerk. Don't be disrespectful to people, you know. But as far as films are concerned, like, you know, there has to be in a crime story, there has to be a victim, period. So,
Did you have something that I'm interested in? Whenever someone's making their second film, I'm really intrigued by I don't like the word fear, but I guess fear, concern, or something that you remember was really in your consciousness on your first film, but on your second film, you just were able to just power through it because maybe you just had a moment where you were just like, oh yeah, I remember this stuff from After for Hire, and this is just how I can power through it as a filmmaker. Is there something specific you could tell us about that with Chameleon?
Yeah, many examples. This was a tough one to get to the finish line. This is my first crime film, first kind of serious film. I just made comedies mostly. It was to do a serious drama, a comedic film. I mean, it's funny to say, but a lot of people say comedy's harder, but I feel like comedy is two things. It's the story and the drama, but it's also you're saved by hopefully some comedy, here and there on top of it. With a more serious film, a crime film especially, it's almost like you have to really uphold the illusion at all times, even more so. And if you have a crack or a crease in it, it's so noticeable. So it's just a matter of almost having no air. Does that make sense? You can't.
Yes.
If you have one moment of bad performance, or if you have one moment of inconsistent lighting, or if you have something like that, it will distract and potentially break the viewer's entire, experience. And this movie's not perfect, but I've decided to lean into and be transparent with what we shot with. And I don't have to get too specific, but we shot it for the price of a used car. And I just think that's important to talk about, because with this type of film, you do need, I wouldn't suggest anybody do this type of film on a $6,800 budget, but because you need resources, you need time, you need to be able to you need camera movement, you need all these things that usually cost money and a crew and all this. And so that being said, there were a lot of potential distractions that we had to go around and figure out and go through making this movie. And I guess shooting it would, production, we had limited takes, of course. And we got all the coverage we needed. It looks good. But the average scene length is 30 seconds long. So we were able to kind of shoot and then get another angle and shoot and get another angle and just shoot and do the best we can. And we got it done. You do power through. And then I would say my biggest test was in the edit room. This was a very nonlinear movie on the page. And when I put that nonlinear down when we had shot it and I put it down on the timeline, the edit timeline, it did not work. And I think the simple fact was you didn't care about the lead character as much because he was conning you the first 10 minutes. That's how it was in the initial cut, was the Big Bear stuff first. And then we lead back up to the Big Bear stuff. The problem with it was,
okay,
you didn't care about the character because he just cheated you for 10 minutes and people just didn't care. It was oh, I don't like this guy. And that's really more important than some clever plot, So made a decision to make it more linear and make it more of a hero's journey and a straightforward kind of, this is his struggle first, And then we lead into why he's doing these things. And it's one of those things where the main goal became, we want people to get behind this guy first. We can't have him, tricking them and you think he's despicable. Nobody's going to continue watching, or maybe some people, but you get the point, So that took me 20
years
to understand. And then finally, by the time I got to that, and it's a terrible feeling to have 25 cuts of a movie where you're like, oh shit, is this going to work? Did we just waste our time and money,
Right.
And it's that kind of cliche, but we did figure it out, and yeah, we're feeling pretty good about how it came out, all things considered. So, long answer.
No, I like what you're saying. I like what you're saying about that shit feeling, because a couple weeks back we had a show that just I felt like I had just captained the Titanic, and then it just ended up being one of the most liked shows we've had. People were just people I know were messaging me oh, you were so honored. You're so, and I was just oh man, I wasn't.
Are you being just nice to me, or do you really need me?
I know.
Do I not have any self?
Yeah.
Relationship.
Yeah. That, Yeah, so it was like, so I realized, you know, and I think, like, if you, of course, know, it's like, but I think it take, I took me way too long to learn, where sometimes it's just like, you know, that you just put it out there and it's going to be, and you can just do your best, but the movie gods are going to grab it and twist it, turn it, put it wherever. And so, you know, so I just, God, and I can remember when people used to, don't say God. You know what? I'm not talking about a deity, whatever. Anyway, do you have.
I hear you.
So
I hear
something
you.
I remember.
No, I hear you, though.
Yeah. When we spoke last time, I remember you had told me you started out as a grip. You did crew work, and so with Chameleon directing, like, do you have a lesson you took from Chameleon that was probably the best lesson for yourself that you could really sit down and be like, you know what, I wouldn't have got that lesson if I wasn't doing Chameleon.
You know, I would say I officially started out with just grabbing a camera out of boredom and shooting some stuff, you know, with friends and all that. That really is the true first start. And then my true start in the industry was as a grip, for sure, you know, and from that, you learn how to light and rig a camera to anything without having to pay somebody else to do it. For Chameleon, what I've learned, the biggest lesson with what I've learned is, oh my gosh, my lesson is no more no budget movies. That's my lesson to myself. No more. You know, I did it. I'm glad I did it. I'm glad we all went on the ride. And I think it's a great thing to have done it. And it's going to help us out, I think. And especially if people realize what we did it with. That's the true achievement with this film, I think. It's just like the fact that we shot a movie for $6,800 and it's like nationwide on all cable and satellite platforms. And it's going to be sold foreign and like it's out there. The problem, the issue that you have to be okay with, potential issue, is that you're going to be judged on your work, and a lot of people aren't going to know how much you did not have. They don't care. They only see the movie. And so they're going to judge you based on what you gave them. And so you have to be okay with that. And I'm okay with that with this film. I'm not okay with that for the next film. It's time to graduate and go to that next place. So that's my big lesson as far as truly just as being honest as possible. This is a stepping stone to that next project. Yeah, no, there's stories that I have that I want to tell, and I want to do them more justice than just, you know, a micro-budget, you know? So it's just about that time. But everything's led to this.
Congratulations. Congratulations on that. And that you were in that book. That was I read that post that you put up. That was really cool to see. What the hell is it like to look at a film book and see your name? I mean, that's a question right there.
Well, the real question is, what's it like to put that film book beside the other film books that you've been collecting for 15 years, you know? That's the best thing.
Yeah.
That right there. It was awesome, dude. It was awesome. It's a great feeling. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to just be humble and grateful, you know? I'm not trying to... It's like, I hope that the information is useful, and I hope that I'm not shooting myself in the foot for being so transparent, but it is what it is, and I think that's what's most helpful, you know? The experience to others.
No, that's really cool. I love your answer. The farthest I've went in that direction is a film I produced was mentioned in Filmmaker Magazine. And ooh. I just was like, I still have it framed in my office.
That's nice.
It was just like a paragraph.
Magazine, they can be, I would be thrilled. Sorry, Filmmaker Magazine. That's a good look, though.
Right, right. Well, what was crazy too was Ichu Mamatomien was on the cover, and that was my favorite movie. So I was like, wow, I'm like in the issue about Ichu Mamatomien. I'm like, so this,
wow.
It doesn't, you know, I love shit really doesn't happen again, and that's not being negative. It's like, it's of that time and space in your career or your whatever. And I think sometimes artists, I'm not being preachy or presumptuous, but I think you could probably relate to this, where so much of what we do creatively, like if we spend time talking about any of the roadblocks and then we wonder why the project doesn't happen. And I don't mean being practical, like you have to line produce and you have to be sure that you're going to have this or that, and you're out in Palm Springs, so you got to make sure you have water because it's 3,000 degrees, but just letting it flow. Yeah, common sense stuff. And I think that that's kind of like the climate that we're at with some of the art that's going on. And that's where, and I think this does apply to Chameleon because, like, I have to word this so in a certain way. Like, Chameleon didn't happen because you're a white male. And so, like, I feel it's always like every artist I know, all the wonderful men, women, television, directors, cinematographers that come on, they don't spend time with saying what's not going to happen. And so that's what I really dig about you saying that the budget is what it was, because it was just like, you know, there's that like, I'm going to wake up and I'm going to do it.
I mean, it's just a cop-out at this point. Just because somebody's a white man means they've been given something. That's just ridiculous, you know? That doesn't mean that there's not sympathy or empathy for others, minorities, but it's like, there's such thing as poor white people, right, you know, that don't get opportunities also. So I don't think they should be just entirely grouped into, you know, a lot of people have to fight. And I think people that fight for something should just simply get credit for it. Simple as that, you know, not turn it into a social thing, you know? I'm from the, one of the, like, Kinston, North Carolina has one of the highest crime rates in the state of North Carolina. I mean, there was nobody telling me, showing me how to get out of that place. We had to get out. I had to get out. Not that I grew up on the bad side of town, but I didn't grow up on Country Club Drive either, you know? And like, you had to figure it out yourself. And by the time I figured it out, I mean, I was 21 years old by the time I got out of that place, you know, it took me forever. And so I don't think, I'm just proud of that. I'm proud to be able to come get as far as I have and still have the support of home, you know, while I'm doing it. And I don't have any patience for someone to suggesting that I've been given much, because, you know, it's okay to claim that you've earned it. And it's okay to say, I work hard and I deserve this, you know, even if the social, social climate doesn't suggest as much. Like,
the price.
You know, it's like what Tarantino said when they asked him about the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Cannes screening, I believe it was, and somebody was, some reviewer or whatever, some French critic or whoever was like, so can you explain why there's not any women in this film and why the only one that's, whatever he said, you know, to attack Tarantino about that. And the answer he gave was just so classic, which is, I reject your hypothesis. You know?
Oh, like, that's right. I saw that. Yeah.
I reject your hypothesis. Now, don't be hateful.
Oh, totally.
Just be cool, man. Yeah, just be cool. Yeah, don't turn it into something else. Don't be that person. You know?
I call it spin your own spaghetti and eat it.
Pretty good.
That's
I like
my
that.
Thing.
It's almost a t-shirt.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. So say you can use it as a line of dialogue, but no one else. So do you have we had talked, you know, creative process, and we had kind of just briefly mentioned sports, but I would love to know, like, is there an actual, like, do you actually really feel it besides just from like COVID jokes? Like, could you actually say that it's like shifted your, either your calmness or your, just your ability to unplug by that, you know, you can't just turn to a game, like, as part of your process?
Oh, oh my God. Totally. I was pretty aware of how much I loved it. I mean, there's no secret, basketball and baseball and football. I mean, tennis even, you know, cause tennis is the dead, you know, sport, whatever. You know, it was like, so much that you're used to, just being able to look forward to at the end of the day and like sit back, and something about just watching competitive competition. It's just, it's like as old as the, you know, humans themselves probably, right? Or like, you know, anything about the Olympics. I don't know what it is, but basketball, especially, you know, where I'm from, again, it's very, you know, it's ingrained in you. And for this thing to have started like 3 days, but pretty much like right in between the ACC tournament, 3 days before Selection Sunday for the NCAA March Madness tournament, like, you're talking about worst timing ever. And then for the playoffs, the NBA playoffs, to the NBA was heating up, and, you know, all the storylines that you always get at the end of a sports season, like, it was looking fun, man. And have I missed it? Oh my God, I've missed it. It's, you know, I'll be honest with you, I'm drinking a little bit more than I would normally drink, or maybe, you know, indulging in something here and there, or on the phone talking to somebody longer than I would. It's like, man, I just need some sports, man. Like, this is not good. God bless Netflix. God bless having a kid that keeps you occupied most of the day. you know, but I would feel so much more idle if I didn't have those things. The answer to your question, it's been terrible.
Oh no, totally. No, I resorted to getting ESPNGo.com to watch sports documentaries. Because I was just going nuts without baseball. I was just like, I got to watch baseball documentaries. I've already watched Ken Burns baseball 5 times. I don't need to spend another 12 hours watching that, you know? So,
well, I got to say, I've been very fortunate to have a basketball documentary that I've been working on that we finished up that WME is shopping around now. So that did, for the first month without sports, that took the place of sports. Like, to be able to, like, finish that and to put all my energy into that, that was a nice saving grace for a little bit.
Oh, okay. Well, I was bummed I missed The Last Dance because I don't have, I have four movie channels, 3 streaming services. So I missed The Last Dance because I don't have TV to watch ESPN.
Just get Sling, like get a Sling trial for like 12 or whatever, 7 days and watch all that and then cancel it. Sorry, Sling.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I did. I got YouTube TV and like part 9 and 10 came on and then And then when that's how good I thought it was, I was like, oh, shit, man, I don't have 8 hours this week to watch it. I was like, oh, it's just so, and I thought it was just so great. It was so good.
Well, half of it's Fallout. It's really about 5 hours long, probably. You take out all the commercials.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So now we get to our favorite. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because before this, I went through this period when this began where I watched less movies, and it was because I was like, watching more movies was so much fun when everyone you knew wasn't doing it. So it was like, you were that guy at the party that was like, he saw 4 movies this week, but everyone now is like, well, I saw this and I saw 18 episodes of this.
Special.
You haven't seen
it's
this.
It's not special anymore. Yeah. Well, even like to be the guy that was making movies. Now everybody's got a movie. You know, my grandma's starting production next week. Can't believe it.
Really?
Hey, now. No, not really. But I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay, well, I asked because my grandma, I just never got to ask her. I don't know why, but I just know she wanted to be a filmmaker and just was just in that you do not even talk about having dreams as a woman, but she could just, without IMDb or Google or a book, she could just be like, oh, Billy Wilder, blah, blah, blah. Oh, John Ford, blah, blah, blah. Oh, blah, 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 blah.
And I look back and I'm just like,
what? Like, and I never asked her if she wanted to make a film. So I wish I would have. So now you get to, you've made it to the bonus round, and I appreciate your time, of course. And before we get into the bonus round of questions, why don't you fire away with any websites or social media you'd like to mention so people can hop on and follow and keep along with Chameleon and check it out. Well,
I'll just say wherever you watch TV is besides SVOD, you know, Chameleon is up there. We're on obviously iTunes and Amazon's and Vudu's and Google Play's, but we're also on like Dish Network, DirecTV, Spectrum, Charter, Cox. Pretty much if you have cable or satellite, we're there. But you just do a simple Google search and it'll pop right on up.
I saw you were in Best Buy, but are you in Walmart? I was looking in Walmart last night and maybe just Walmart.
DVD will come out in about a week and we're on the, thank you. Best Buy, Walmart, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon. But we're going to be, you know, available to order online. I'm pretty sure they're not going to put them in the stores, especially right now. But what's the difference? You know, you can order them from those stores' websites. We have some director commentary, director and actor commentary, by the way, which is a lot of fun. You know, that's what's so unique about the DVD. That's fun.
Oh, that must be really interesting. You know, that's a little thing that we try to do here with the show that, I've had before. I've been like, hey, DVD commentaries. And I forget how many years we're approaching that DVDs have become like, huh? And so I really try to format these like people can get a, watch it on Netflix or watch it on Prime and then come here and it's at least like some form of a DVD. Very much an inspiration for what we do here.
The weird thing is, I've talked to Jillian, my baby mama. She works at Netflix, and I'm asking her, like, why don't you guys have director commentary options under the audio option? You know what I mean? Like, filmmakers would love to do that.
Right.
I think people love commentary. Y'all need to add that. And then I asked her if she could get me a job at Netflix, but she didn't get back to me. So. I'm just kidding. No, but it's like, why kill off commentary? Just because DVD is a physical media is dying off slowly. You can still keep the commentary aspect, you know, with just a click of the button, if, you know, if you're Netflix.
Oh, totally.
I totally miss commentaries.
I bought Ocean's 11 last night, actually, speaking of Soderbergh.
Oh, that's a great commentary.
I have listened to the comments. Yes, there's a couple. And I only bought it because my best female friend of 20 years, it was our first date. So it's more like a sentimental movie. But
okay.
I thought
if you
want
to hear
Soderbergh
trash his own cinematography, that's the one to listen to.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, because see, I've only listened to the actors one on this.
Like the first scene in Ocean's 11 under the director's commentary, Soderbergh is just bashing his own cinematography. It's pretty funny, really. But I think him and the writer.
Oh, that's interesting. I'll bust that out today. Thanks for telling me that.
You should watch it. Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, I love it. It's one of my favorite movies ever.
I just remember thinking I was my best female friend was a model, still is, and I just remember thinking like, okay, I got the model. Oh, wait, my suit's not as cool as Brad Pitt's. And I don't have the money they have. So all I got is the model, which she knows I love and respect her, so I can say she's a model and it's not being rude. So let's see. So the bonus round of questions, we do model after Inside the Actor Studio, but we like to ask every guest. Do you have, I know you said you want to make as many different movies as possible, but if you were having to retire and there was just one genre that you were getting to do, and never mind, like, the story's there, the budget's there, blah 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 blah, but like, what's, if you were given that one genre, what do you think it would be?
Crime films. Whether and when I say crime films too, you can do so much within crime films. There's, you know, I mean, in my opinion, you know, you can do a heist film. You can do a gangster film. You know, you can do a whodunit. You know, you can do a procedural, you know, a detective story, whatever. So I think that it's the best way to really pick on society, or not pick on, but, you know, really examine society, because really crime stories are all about what society deems as right or wrong. And you have these characters that represent each side of that fence, you know, and that's what's so fun about it. And it's kind of existential, you know, and there's just so much you can do with it. And I just, you know, I mean, look at the stuff we grew up watching, like 90s films was crime films. Most, I mean, I would say half the movies that were in the box, you know, in the theater were crime films. I mean,
oh yeah. Seven with the 70s, and Heat. With the 60s, I remember those just, yeah. I mean, Heat, Seven, you know what I mean? I remember just like my brain being blown off. I was just like, what the fuck?
But I mean, all
Day
the
Afternoon.
Stuff, most of the Soderbergh stuff. Yeah. City Women.
Yeah.
But even like the 60s stuff. I mean, I love French crime stuff. I love like Jean-Pierre Melville, you know, and all the Godard stuff, you know, Band of Outsiders is, you know, it's for the time it was made, it was special. And,
Band of Outsiders is great.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like just even seeing, like, it's been around for, I mean, well, I would say it's been around for a long time. I mean, I think as far as just even like the story form of even the detective, I mean, I think what Edgar Allan Poe created that in the mid 1800s. That's a pretty new, Edgar Allan Poe, our fellow American. And most people think that it was Conan O'Doyle with the, the Sherlock Holmes dude, which I've never read any of that, but no, it was actually Edgar Allan Poe that created the detective genre, you know, which doesn't encompass all of crime, but definitely a heavy little cornerstone of the crime genre. So, but my point is, like, just look at how it's taken off since it was created. You know, it's always just been a mainstay, and at least, you know, and really international storytelling since it was created. So, I just think that speaks to like the power of the genre itself. So yeah, if I had to get stuck in one genre, I would say crime. And I would say I definitely have a detective story, like a whodunit, a mystery, whatever you want to call it, that I need to get out.
Right. Okay.
That I will probably end up making. Yeah. Sooner rather than later. you know.
Excellent. Well, you always have a chair here, so you always please let me know when you want to come back. And by the way, I do this on air, even though I've told you off air, but I do it so the guests understand the filmmakers that we're talking to. You know, you told me like 4 or 5 years ago you would come back, and you did. So the team just wants to thank you and honor that on air, that we very much appreciate people that keep their word, because we live off of our word. So thank you for that one.
You did say you were going to PayPal me some money, right? I'm kidding.
And, I'm talking. I owe you back royalties from the last episode.
Oh yeah, I think it was 37 cents.
I know.
No, yeah, yeah. I think we got a couple of listeners on that one, but
I know.
But no, come on, man. It's great to be wanted and to be to have your opinion valued. I mean, come on, it's great. Thank you for having me. Seriously, yeah. It's always just it's very comfortable, and it's not like, you know, it makes for a better interview that way too. So it's all good.
Thank you. That's my goal. So I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
So the last question, you know, let's take out that you mentioned you just had a child, but the lights are off. You haven't eaten. You're the struggling LA artist, but no matter what, you would not do this genre or story.
Oh, my gosh. I love these questions. You know, the first thing that pops in my head, I don't want to say I'd never do it, but I really have no interest in making a musical. Just never been a fan, probably because I don't watch them and I can't deal with them. I don't know what it is. If I wanted to go to a concert, I'd just do that. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's weird for me. Like, I know a lot of people love them. I'm not the biggest fan. So I would say musicals, probably. Maybe.
Interesting.
Who knows in the future? Yeah.
Thank you for giving me the fourth answer that wasn't, we'll just say they don't want to work in the San Fernando Valley.
Or
San Diego.
You know what? There are some of the coolest damn locations in the San Fernando Valley, though, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, there is. Great pools.
It's pretty hot. Pretty hot and stinky, but they can't see that on screen.
Oh, you know. Yeah, of course. we'll close with, of course, we wish you, your family, safety and all that during these times, and all your associates, friends, anyone you know. And again, everyone, you can check out Chameleon, your video platforms, television, check out the Best Buy Walmart's website, Barnes and Noble's. And we'll close with, if there's anything that you'd like, anything else you'd like to say before I do my wrap up, feel free.
I would say to any filmmakers that are listening that, you know, feel like they need to make something, but they're hesitant or worried that they don't have what they need to execute their vision entirely, I would say definitely weigh it and think about it before you pull the trigger. But also know that, well, you already know, but also remember that life is short, and you might need to create that stepping stone before you can use it to get to that next place. So for me, that's Chameleon.
Those are great words.
Yeah,
all right, excellent. Well, you have a great day, Marcus. It was great talking with you.
You as well, brother. Thank you for having me, man. Appreciate it.
All right, take care. Aloha, buddy.
All right, peace.
That's going to do it here today for Talking Pictures. Whether it's morning, afternoon, or evening, or whatever other crazy time of day you've found during this COVID thing, make sure and watch a good movie. Heck, actually, watch Chameleon. All right, aloha and peace.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, real conversation and movie-induced inspiration.